We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
How we doing today? Happy Monday, Mon. IB Nation Sports Talk is up and rolling. I just saw a couple comments about my trip to the Bahamas that I took. No, as you can see, I don't have dreadlocks. And no, Stymie, I did not find $8 billion. So here we are. Vince DiDario, Sean Stiers. We're rolling on this Monday. Glad to be. Who needs $8 billion when we've got each other, right?
Absolutely. Money, I mean, money is not what it's all about by any stretch.
No.
Friendship is what it's all about.
Yes. Yes. Let's just keep telling each other that.
Yes. If I ever won $8 million, Sean, some of it will be coming your way.
I would throw you some as well if I won.
Appreciate that.
$8 million. I've got, you know, like, sort of a list of, you know, in my mind anyway.
That's right.
It would go. I would throw the D'Addario's a bone, though. That's for sure.
Yes.
All right. So we're going to put kind of the final wraps on Notre Dame USC, of course, today. I know you did close to marathon programming on Saturday. You did a pregame show. I forgot about the watch party you guys were doing Saturday. How'd that go, ultimately?
You know what? It was actually pretty fun. You know, I get a little wound up during games, and it was funny watching. So we came on at 7. The game obviously didn't even start till like 7:45, and so I'm like, you know, and people are like, oh my gosh, he's wound up. He's like, he's ready to go, and all this stuff. And it was once the game started, I thought the conversation was good because we were talking about strategy and all these different things, and there was a lot of good stuff in the chat, and it was a good time. I had a really good time. It was fun. It was different. That was for sure. It was definitely different.
Yeah, I had a different viewing experience of my own Saturday because I was still in the Bahamas. Notre Dame, the women played at 4:15, so the game got over, you know, around 6:15-ish, something like that, a little bit before 6:15. Then we had some time, get back to the hotel, and there was like a little – not a sports bar, but there was a little bar right down the road from where the resort was. And so we watched a lot of the staff went there. The team was not there.
Okay.
But the staff went there, you know, the coaching staff, a lot of the, you know, the other staff, you know, like the trainer, the strength coach, you know, all these different people were there. There were a couple parents, you know, of some players that were there as well. So it was first time watching with a group personally.
Yeah.
A long time, actually. And, you know, it was obviously very Notre Dame connected as well. After Michael Mayer scored Notre Dame's first touchdown, Neil Ivy jumps up and she does some push-ups. She does 7 push-ups.
Did somebody put her up? Did people put her up?
She did them on the floor. She did them on the floor. Her and a couple other, the strength coach actually jumped down there as well. So, you know, so that was a little bit different. So we did that for the first half. Then we went back to the resort. Everybody kind of dispersed at halftime. Really horrible reception for ABC in my room. It was the worst of the channels, of course.
It was.
But it was like it had kind of a choppy feed, and the audio would go like Herb Street and Fowler basically sounded like chipmunks most of the night. And that's probably an improvement based on a lot of the comments that I've seen about
from Fowler. What I've heard, that sounds like an absolute improvement. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll touch on that rapid fire coming up in a little bit. If you would right now hit that like button on YouTube, of course, we appreciate it. You help out the Irish Breakdown channel, podcast, rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. We do appreciate it. It's amazing that the regular season is over at this point.
Nuts.
We've got about a week to, you know, a little bit less than a week, obviously. We'll find out where Notre Dame's going for its bowl game. But boom, here it is. It's gone.
It goes by so fast, Sean. And I
know.
I will say, and I just to kind of touch on your watch party with the other, with the women's staff, I do really appreciate, and I'm only associated with Notre Dame as far as like being on campus and speaking with coaches and stuff like that. So I'm not speaking as a whole, like all other colleges and college campuses and all of that. But at Notre Dame, at least the sports that I'm around, it is awesome to see the support that the other coaches have for the other programs. Because when I was at, summertime, I'm in the football facility and they had the baseball game when they were in the College World Series.
Right.
Not the College World Series. It was the regional against Tennessee. They had that game up on the Jumbotron during the football camp. And when they turned that double play to win it and go to the College World Series, all the coaches were hype and getting excited. And they actually gave a darn about what was happening with another program on campus. And so I don't think it's like that everywhere. And so I think that's pretty cool. I think that's really cool. So
I do too.
I'm glad you got to experience that with another staff. You know what I mean?
Good
I
point. Neat.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Good point. Yeah. And like I said, it had been a while since I'd really done something like that. It was kind of cool to get, you know, out of the resort and down. It was, like I said, it was a little bar. The bar maid, I guess you would see, you know, I don't know if that's what we call them these days, but she was overwhelmed. She was like, she just kept saying, I was not ready for this. Because it was a group of, you know, like 20 plus people.
I'm sure.
One of us basically took over the bar. And yeah, she was working. She was working.
I'm sure she made some money on it. So
that's what
sure
I told her. Okay. I said, look, you're going to get a good tip when this is all said and done. So just keep that in mind. Okay.
Just keep working, babe. Just keep doing your thing.
Yeah. So The score ends up being USC 38, Notre Dame 27.
Yep.
My score prediction for this game.
You got some flack for this too, by the way.
I did. USC 35, Notre Dame 27. So I don't delight in the fact that I was right, but I picked Notre Dame's point exactly, and I was just 3 points off on the Trojans' point total. And I did get some flack for being the only staff member to pick against Notre Dame. And as I said on Twitter, wait, what am I just supposed to rubber stamp Notre Dame every week? What's the use in making picks if that's
right,
what we're
exactly
gonna do, right? So this is what I said about the matchup when I sent, you know, we have to send Brian our little write-up and our pick and all that stuff. So here's what I said about the matchup, and I'll let you evaluate this, okay? I said, this is the latest in a line of games this season that I think Notre Dame can win, but there's just so much that has to go right. Southern Cal's run defense, justifiably so, is the weakness that's pointed to that, you know, should most impact this game. But the Trojans allowed just 138 rushing yards and 424 passing yards in their only loss of the season, a one-point loss to Utah, while they gave up 204 yards on the ground in the previous week's game, 48-45, in their win over UCLA. So they gave up over 200 yards to UCLA, still won the game. Notre Dame has to not only run the ball, but be more multifaceted with its offense, get a big special teams player too, and turn Caleb Williams and company over more than once. A tough task considering Williams has just 3 interceptions in 385 pass attempts. So that's what I said. Vince?
Yeah.
You know, again, I'm not reveling in the result, but I think I pretty much nailed it. What do you think?
Well, you did nail it, and I think that, you know, Notre Dame was not able to get the run game going. That was obviously not the way they wanted to start, and that's why they got themselves into a 10-point hole in the first quarter. I mean, offensively, they played USC straight up from the second quarter on. The problem was they gave up a 10 spot
right
at the beginning of the game, and they just – and look, we said it all along that Notre Dame is not built to come back. That's not who they are. They're just not. And while they had their opportunities to do that, because they did, it was and as bad as the defense played, as far as giving up points, right? As bad as the defense played, Notre Dame still had an opportunity to win that game. It was the turnovers. It was the 2 turnovers, specifically the first one that did them in. It was the, and right. You said in your write up, Notre Dame needs to turn over USC, which obviously they did not do. And USC ended up turning over Notre Dame twice. So they were -2 in the turnover ratio. Ball game. I mean,
you talk about game of inches. You know, there were obviously a couple times where it looked like Notre Dame, you know, was going to have a turnover. And, you know, like USC, you know, but, you know, I think they got all the replays correct, you know, including, you know, the spot of Drew Pine. And it's like, initially, like Pine did just flip over, and then boom, his elbow's down.
Yeah, you know? That was. And I thought even on the field that was a bad call, to be honest with you. I thought they gave him a really good spot, even if his elbow didn't touch. I felt it was still a good spot, to be honest with you. But and they got the fumble correct, right? I mean, they got it right. And when you look back on it, all the 50-50 calls, rightfully so. I'm not saying that they were wrong in those calls. But all the 50-50 stuff seemed to go USC's way.
Yeah.
You know, from a karma standpoint. You know what I mean? Not
right.
Not that, you know, it could have gone either way from a call standpoint, but from just the way, so the fumble, the first down, you know, those things, you could look at those as like 50-50 plays, but they went USC's way. They recovered the fumble. And then the one that Drew Pine had, he had a chance to recover it and didn't. USC recovers it, right?
Yeah.
USC fumbles the ball. They end up recovering it. So, I mean, just all of those, that 50-50 stuff just went the other way. And that's just how the game is played, man. I mean, that's football.
Yeah. And I mean, they were right in there. And again, like, they needed to be at least even in the turnover. They couldn't be minus. And that's, you know, but like USC went into that game, I think they had caused like 24 turnovers all season going into that game. Notre Dame had turned the ball over, obviously, a lot more in recent games, but they weren't near what USC was, and USC protects the ball so well. Like I said, Caleb Williams still only has three interceptions. And, you know, so that was a tough task. They had to in a game, you know, it's one thing, you know, just like for a quarterback to, you know, or a team to, you know, put up all these stats against a decidedly inferior opponent like Boston College, UNLV, whoever it happens to be. It's one thing to do that. But when you're going up against a team that at the very least you're more evenly matched with, if not, you know, they were an underdog going into this game, you had to have more of that kind of, you know, that, and that was my point. You had to create some breaks of your own. It had to be all three phases. It couldn't just be all on the shoulders of the offense. And unfortunately, that's how it ended up, especially when they did turn it over. But I'll tell you what, though, what's also underrated, Vince, is when USC gets the ball first, marches downfield, converts a couple third downs, you know, using some misdirection on a couple consecutive plays and, you know, hitting big plays in the process, getting downfield, they go right down and score 7-0. And that's what you're worried about. Like, worst case scenario, that it's just going to be like, boom, here comes USC just waltzing downfield. And then you go 3-and-out on your opening drive. That is just, they got very fortunate, I felt like, you know, after falling behind 7-0 and then 10-0, that it was only 10-0, that the defense, at least in that instance, with a short field, because USC, after Notre Dame goes 3-and-out, they get the ball at their own 49, and then the defense does at least make them settle for a field goal. That, to me, was one of the few victories that the defense truly got all night.
Very few.
Fortunate not to be in a bigger hole right off the bat.
Yeah, very few. And that's the problem. I mean, you know, you're right. That was the one. It was one of two drives that USC had all night where they didn't score.
Yeah.
And, you know, they put Notre Dame in a position.
Well, it was three, right? Because Caleb Williams did the little quick punt twice.
Right. So, I mean, that was two. They only had two punts.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, that's the only time that Notre Dame stopped them from scoring. They went touchdown, field goal, punt, touchdown, 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 punt, touchdown, end of the game. And the last possession, technically, they didn't score, but all they did was put a knee on it. So, I mean, that doesn't count, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah. They had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 possessions, and they scored on 6 of them. I mean, the defense didn't show up as a whole. They just didn't. I mean, and I don't – it was that first turnover by Drew. And look, yes, his stats were really good, okay? His stats were good. But you can't turn the ball over twice, because every time he turned the ball over, they went down and scored a touchdown, okay? So say what you want about Drew, and he had a good game, except for those two turnovers. But you can't say except for those two turnovers. That's the thing, because the first turnover was a 14-point swing. You were in the red zone going down to score, and I fully believe that Notre Dame would have scored a touchdown there.
Talking about the fumble. Yeah.
Yeah, they would have scored a touchdown there.
No, I know. That's a big swing.
Instead, USC gets the ball. They go 7 plays, 74 yards, score a touchdown. That's a 14-point swing. So if you look at the final score, you take 7 points away from USC, you add 7 points to Notre Dame, it's a different ball game, and they're not in a 2-point drill or a 2-minute drill at the end for Drew to throw an interception.
I mean, that
first turnover that was deadly in that game.
TCU right now is undefeated, essentially still, because of a similar scenario against the Kansas Jayhawks. When Kansas was still undefeated, I think they were both 4-0 or 5-0 going into that game. Kansas is driving late in the first half. Fumble at the 1-yard line of TCU. TCU ends up with the ball, and I think it took them like 4 plays to go down and score a touchdown. Again, it's a 14-point swing right there, and it ended up being a 1-possession game at the end. And as a result, here's TCU in the college football playoff.
That's the difference.
You know, it's a big killer.
And that's football, man. And I do want to push back on this. Salty, it says a failed 4th-and-1 with USC scoring afterwards. They did not score afterwards. They actually punted after that. So when Notre Dame turned it over on downs, USC punted immediately following. But still,
I want to talk. My biggest grievances with play calling in that game were those first two possessions.
Absolutely.
Other than that, I felt like, and I'll talk about it here in a second, but I'll just say this first. I do feel like when you look, especially offense, defense, and we'll save the defense here for a second, but I felt like Tommy Rees was at was at least able to adjust. You know, it's something we've been all over him for. Sure. They obviously were not able to run the ball as effectively. Now, when you fall behind, you've got to kind of come out of your game plan anyway, but they still adjusted, you know, and Pine obviously played a pretty good game. They made good adjustments. But let's talk about, real quick, third and two, first possession. Again, they go three and out. The Diggs jet sweep, you know, you've got your 21, or was it even 22 personnel out there? Anyway, you've got your two running backs. You've got Estime, you've got Diggs out there. But, you know, one, because I think it was 22. Now, again, I can't remember. I can't say for sure if Jaden Thomas was on the field. So, you know, don't blame me for being, you know, like one of these.
It might have been 32 personnel guys. Or 23 personnel. I mean, yeah. Either way.
At the very least, there were two running backs, but they had everybody lined up tight. So what have they got? 11 in the box for USC, and they do a jet sweep to Logan Diggs. I think, you know, question number one is, why was it not Chris Tyree, you know, your fastest running back running a jet sweep, or just fake the jet sweep and give it to Audric Estime, because I fully trust him to just truck it, the defensive back who is sitting on the edge of the defense, and pick up the first down.
Well, I have a multitude of issues with that, because I wouldn't even call it a jet sweep, because he came from a wing position. True. So he didn't even have an opportunity.
He didn't even have a faster head start. Yeah.
He didn't even have an opportunity to get up to full speed. And so you 100% ran right into that. I mean, that was just not good. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. It was not good. The play calling on that particular play was not good. Why would you bring everybody into the box and then try to run outside of that? And it was overthinking the situation by a huge degree,
which we've seen a lot of.
We have. And it was a big problem in this game on these two particular plays.
Yes. For sure. Yes. And then the Mitchapalooza play on fourth and one, which, you know, is again, it's after the Drew Pine. First, he's got the first down. They go to replay.
Fourth he and a long one. That's the problem.
And that's a great point, because it was a long one. Like, you know, going back and looking at it, it's not just like fourth and half a yard or fourth and inches. It's a yard plus that he had to get to pick that up. And again, all 11 guys are in the box because of the formation that you've got. That would have been the perfect time, because I think it was Jaden Thomas standing on the left side of the line. He crashes in. He's basically just jumping on the pile. He wasn't actually blocking anybody. Just have him freaking free release, and that's the perfect time to have Mitchell Evans throw that Mitchapalooza pass for the first time. I mean, he probably might have scored a touchdown out of it.
I honestly thought that's what we were going to see, if I'm being honest. I thought that this is the perfect opportunity for a fake, and I thought it was almost too obvious that it was going to be a fake, if I'm being totally clear on this. When they lined up, and I was like, well, they're not going to sneak it here. That'd be stupid. So this is an obvious – I mean, this is an obvious situation where you're going to fake that we've all been waiting for.
Yes.
They've snuck it so many times. Here comes the fake. It's going to get stopped because everybody knows it's coming. But no, they tried to sneak it, and I'm just befuddled by that whole situation. That just shocks me.
And you've done it enough this year. You're not surprising USC with anything in that instance. That was like, if you're going to go for it, that's the perfect time to pull that pass, you know. But again, that's not, you know, and again, you're also in field goal range, right? If I'm remember, you're in field goal range. So
on the fourth down?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I'm going to assume that you're right, but I don't honestly don't remember. I just remember being very upset. So it's kind of where I'm at on that one.
Yeah.
You're right. They did. They drove. Let's see. They started on the 27.
They were at the 27. They were at the 27 or 28 yard line.
And they had gained. They started on the 27, gained 54 yards.
Right.
Right. So they were right on the edge of field goal range at the very least.
Yeah.
I will say this. Groupie has the leg to get it from there. I don't know if he's got the left to right, but he's definitely.
Yeah.
He definitely has the north to south. It was the left and right that I would have been worried about.
We've only got one more game to worry about Groupie's range.
That's
a
solid point.
And then it's on to the next guy. So, So Mike Nolan with the super chat. First two possessions, missed assignments. Tight end released. Didn't seal linebacker. Play was open. third and three, Pine Miss Diggs flaring open before Mitchapalooza. And that's, you know, it's still, I'm a little bit mixed because you can talk about, well, Drew Pine completed all these passes, you know, first 15 passes to open the game and, you know, over 300 yards and all this different stuff, three touchdown passes. And he did, you know, he played for, you know, with the exception of the two turnovers, which were killers, he played a pretty good game. But there were still, which pass was it? The one where, I know it was second half, and I'm trying to remember off the top of my head here, you know, where the first thing he does is look for Michael Mayer. And of course, Michael Mayer is double teamed. And then I think he's got Colsey running a deeper route on that same side, you know, right behind Mayer. He never looks at him, never throws it. There are still those kind of opportunities for Drew Pine where you can say, well, you know, he's got these numbers and efficiency and all this different stuff, but there's still receivers that he doesn't throw to, you know, and that's.
I mean, he did throw to the backs though. Five receptions for 64 yards or whatever.
He did.
So, I mean, he did throw to the backs more, and it was
we've been calling for it. You know, yes, you're right. We can't overlook it.
We all saw it. So he did throw to the backs. So I mean, that, you know, it's okay. I don't want to pick on Drew, right? Because he played a good game, but you can't say he played a good game, but right and. He played a good game, but they had those turnovers, specifically the first one. That's the game to me. I'm sorry.
Michael, I do agree, again, to an extent. He says 15 passes to where. What does that mean if you're not scoring touchdowns? Well, he did throw three touchdown passes. So it's like, but again, there are always opportunities that Drew leaves on the field.
Right. And Michael's very upset they only scored 7 points in the first half. I get it. I totally understand where you're coming from, right?
But again, if you're giving away, you know, you gave away the first possession when you go three and out. You go three and out against, and that was my biggest, you know, that was the first question. I'm like, they can't go three and out. They can't go three and out. And then here they go, third and two, and they run that stupid play, and they go three and out. And again,
worst start possible.
Yeah. They were very, very fortunate, again, that the defense when all USC had to do was go 51 yards, that the defense held them in the red zone. One of the few times they've bowed up in the red zone and not allowed a touchdown when a team gets in the red zone this season.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, there's a lot of things that you can nitpick about this game. You're right. 7 points is not enough in the first half. I agree with that. Right. But they went toe to toe with USC scoring wise from the second quarter on.
Yeah,
they did. But they got outscored 10-0 in the first quarter. That's the problem. It's not just the first half. It was the first quarter that was the problem. They gave up 10 points in the first quarter, and they had no semblance of an offense in the first quarter. Because in the first quarter, Notre Dame had two possessions. One was a three and out, and one was a turnover on downs. That's not going to get it done. And nobody's going to dispute that, right? 7 points is not going to get it done.
Right.
But they did hold USC to, you know, they had a 10-point deficit, but they had a 10-point deficit the rest of the game, pretty much. So, you know, again, a valiant effort by many of the Notre Dame players, and then many not so much. And so, as Brian said in the post-game show, there's going to be some serious conversations had with a lot of the, you know, with a number of players, you know, coming out of this at the end of the season and all of these different things. And I am not doubting that Drew Pine played as well as Drew Pine can play. Just can't turn the ball over the way he did. Just can't do it. You can't fumble the ball going into the red zone. You can't do that.
No.
So.
And it's just very unfortunate. I would love to see how the game played out if that hadn't happened. You know, I think we're having a different conversation today. But. It happened. USC. I mean,
it is what it is.
USC only threw for 232 yards, Caleb Williams, but they ran for 204. Right. You know, they're the team that had the balance, no turnovers. And then Notre Dame, 318 passing yards, just 90 rushing yards. And, you know, again, the 318 is a result of the adjustment that they were able to make. It's like, okay, we're not just going to be able to ram it down USC's throat. They stacked the box. You know, they were able to, you know, to come up with enough stops early that it made Tommy Rees and Notre Dame come out of what they wanted to do. USC just dominated the line of scrimmage, though. Again, they rushed for 200 yards. And let me just ask you this, Vince, because we're, you know, I think we both agree that defense is the bigger issue, and we haven't touched on defense yet. We had someone who said he just popped in, D-Rock Irish, may have missed the defensive look. Defensive tackling was atrocious, disappointed in USC gaining 156 yards on a reserve running back. Fair.
Well,
Larry says, biggest problem for me, the blitzes to nowhere.
Sean and I could have had over 100 yards in that game. It didn't matter who the back was. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, they're starting – by the way, they kept showing the starting running back on the sideline. Did you see when they would do that? Did you get a good look at him out of curiosity?
I did.
Did he not look – like his facial hair, to me, if they would have stuck a pair of black glasses on him, he would have looked like Bobby Valentine trying to sneak back into the Mets dugout.
He's not who I thought Dye would look like.
No.
Not at all. Sorry. Not at all. Not who I would have thought he looked like. That's a good one. That's a good one. I like that. I don't know why
that image came into my head when I saw him, but that's exactly what I was thinking. But it wasn't the running back that did amazing things. It was the offensive line. The offensive line took advantage of Notre Dame's front seven and specifically of their linebackers. Took advantage of them all night long, and I give a lot of credit to Lincoln Riley for just sticking with the run, because that's not his MO, and he did it because he knew that that was what was going to win them the game.
Now, and look, Al Golden, you know, talking about adjustments and lack of adjustments, Al Golden came in obviously with a game plan. He went with his 3-3-5 defense, and as you know, Vince, as we all know, sports are about adjustments, and Notre Dame's been really hit and miss with it throughout the season. And I felt like, again, they did a good job of adjusting offensively. Maybe it's because they were forced into that situation, but they still adjusted and were able to turn it into some points in the second half. But when Al Golden was hired, I still remember this. He talked about, well, you know, his background in the NFL, and, you know, they make adjustments series to series and this kind of stuff. And, it, you know, so he felt like that was really going to prepare him and have him ready. But did it feel like we saw that at all? Like, what adjustment did Al Golden make throughout the course of that game?
He didn't. That was the problem.
And there's a track record of it throughout the season where he hasn't adjusted either. Like when you look at how things have gone.
No, I agree with you. The adjustments for this entire staff have been an issue for me the whole season, offensively, defensively. Other teams have made much better second half adjustments than Notre Dame has. And that's a huge problem. That's a huge problem moving forward. And if they can't fix that, then maybe the guys that are there aren't the right guys, because you have to be able to adjust. You have to. And they haven't. And it's not good.
Here's an interesting question, super chat from SB. How important is elite talent to the success of Rees and Golden's schemes? Notre Dame is setting itself up for frustration if top three classes on top of three classes on top. Oh, on top so of top, top three, three classes on top of top are three. Needed to be in the playoffs.
Well, first of all, Notre Dame does have a top three class coming in. Depending on what service you look at, it's either two or three right now. So that's not going to be a problem, number one. So that, I know that's the second part, but so if that's what you need, then Notre Dame's going to have that. I don't think that that is the issue per se because of their schemes. I think that, you know, the obvious thing that Notre Dame is missing is that they're missing an elite quarterback. That's what they're missing, right? And whether you think Tyler Buchner is that guy, or whether you think Kenny Minchie is that guy, or whether you think CJ Carr is that guy, or whatever, they don't have an elite quarterback on the field right now. That's the issue.
Right.
And that was the difference in the game on Saturday.
Yeah.
No matter what you have to say, that was the difference. Well, the defense played like garbage, but if they had an elite quarterback, Notre Dame wins that game.
And look, and it's not just that USC had an elite quarterback. They did. But Notre Dame still has a backup quarterback. You know, like
absolutely.
And I guess what we have to kind of sit back and evaluate when we ultimately evaluate Tommy Rees, because we can be frustrated in a lot of, you know, rightfully so. We can be frustrated with a lot of different things that he did. But at the end of the day, one of the questions to me is, did he maximize Drew Pine? Like, did we see the best that we could That's see fair. Out of Drew Pine? I think the answer is probably yes, based on everything that we saw. So, like, if you're going to grade on the curve, as frustrated as you might be, you know, because again, like Drew Pine, with the exception of Saturday with the interception and the fumble, did not make a lot of fatal mistakes
Agreed.
This season. He protected the ball
yep.
pretty well. You know,
that's why this surprised me, to be honest with you, because I thought that's one thing that he's done really, really well.
Yes.
Is protected the football.
Right. Right. And he ended up going 8-2 as a starting quarterback. And with all the frustrations and everything else, and, you know, and the pendulum of, you know, the Drew Pine arc, it's, you know, it's like, well, you know, everyone's doom and gloom after seeing him at the end of that Marshall game. And I think we're the same, but, you know, but then he goes on, he catches fire for 2.5 games. And then all of a sudden we see the other Drew Pine, where again, he's not turning the ball over, but they're still winning for the most part, with the exception of Sure. Stanford, but he's not turning the ball over, but he's still a sub 50% quarterback. And then, you know, his play kind of elevates again toward the end of the season. And, you know, so much so that people are like, don't even want to talk about having Tyler Buchner in a bowl game,
right.
You know, coming off the bench.
Right.
And so now I have to think that Tommy Rees did maximize Drew Pine. And so, like, as you evaluate Tommy, and I'm not saying Tommy Rees is a perfect offensive coordinator, based on mostly on lack of adjustments and some game plan issues that we saw this season. But I think that I lean much more toward he probably maximized what he could get out of Drew Pine this season.
I don't disagree with you. And this isn't a disagreement, but I felt like they should have, how do I want to say this? If we're looking at Saturday night in a nutshell, I think that's a maximized Drew Pine. I do. I think, right. I think that that's Drew Pine. We're not asking him to be elite, but that's Drew Pine right there. Right. I feel like there were too many games this season where they did not maximize him, and it didn't happen soon enough.
And that's true too.
So that's what true. I'll say to that. But I agree with you.
But but part of it is because of simple things like giving him running backs to throw the ball to more and those kind of things.
And they should have done that more. Like it almost felt like at times, now there were times where he didn't throw it, but there were also times where that running back wasn't put out to throw to, right? And so that is maybe a scheme issue or whatever. So I felt like that could have been done better to help him out earlier in the season than they did. But your point is 100% on par. We have to remind ourselves, Drew Pine is a backup quarterback. He's a backup. And Notre Dame went 8-4 with they went 8-2 with a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
A lot of teams would be pretty stinking happy to have that, right? So, yes, we're all upset about the season. We all think it was a disappointment going 8-4. And I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm on that train, right? But if you look at the macro, the bigger picture, 8-4 with a backup quarterback for 10 games, I mean, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm not trying to just spew rainbows and sunshine here, because it's a disappointing season, right? And Notre Dame was one turnover away from being in a New Year's Six game, in my opinion. They're one turnover away or one defensive stop. One defensive stop from being in a New Year's Six game. So, you know, I'm not happy, but I can at least explain it away a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I agree as well. We had a question. Nick Lane, by the way, with a super chat. We were only down 10 points with 2 turnovers. That's not bad. You know, I don't know. I don't know if I accept it
right.
quite that, you know, Right. Is it that bad? Well, no, but this is not like the 2005 USC or the 2006 right. USC. This is still a little bit different. You know, it's the talent disparity is not that great.
And that's,
it's just that the talent disparity at quarterback
is great.
Was there for everybody to see.
Yes. And I would also say, I mean, you know, you can play this game all you want. And we played this game in 2018, right? When Notre Dame went up against Clemson. If you flip the quarterbacks on that team, Notre Dame wins that game. You can say the same thing about Saturday night. You flip quarterbacks, I don't think the game's close.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest, I don't think the game's close.
Look,
and Notre Dame wins.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The bottom line is, and I was thinking about this, 20 years ago, you know, 20 years ago was 2002, really when the rise of the Pete Carroll era began. 2002, Carson Palmer winning the Heisman Trophy. And then, of course, you had Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush and those guys come in afterwards. But when you look at all the quarterbacks that USC has had drafted in the first round, some of them more deserved than others, but still, with very few exceptions, Brady Quinn, DeShone Kizer are the top two who come to mind. USC has always had an advantage for the most part. You know, the vast majority of the last 20 years, USC has had a great advantage at the quarterback position.
Sure.
Like in the, you know, again, at the beginning of those 20 years with Pete Carroll, it mattered more because they also had more talent across the field. But in more recent years, Notre Dame has had better talent across the field. So they've managed to win those games. Even when you have a guy like Sam Darnold, again, do I think he deserved to be a high first-round pick? No, but he was, you know, so talent evaluators thought that he was. But, you know, whether it's him or, you know, Slovis or, you know, whoever these guys may be, all, you know, really highly thought of quarterback talent, they've had the advantage there. But Notre Dame, I think we all know, you know, that's where Notre Dame has to be better.
Absolutely.
You know, like, just look at Clemson where they are right now.
Yeah.
If you dropped Caleb Williams into Clemson, they'd be a lot different looking.
Sure.
Right now, or, you know, an elite quarterback like Trevor Lawrence. And that's really, like, again, even though Clemson had guys, you know, they had more guys a couple of years ago and Trevor Lawrence was still there. To me, that's still.
But they had DeShone Watson and Trevor Lawrence back to back.
Exactly.
Like, that's an embarrassment of riches, right?
Yes.
Now, they went out and got those guys. Don't get me wrong. They went out and recruited them, did it the right way, you know, all of that. But when you have those two guys back to back, you're going to have success. And they did. They won multiple titles.
Right.
You know,
Things don't have to be as perfect when you can start off with a high end guy at that position. That's
exactly
just what
right.
it comes like. So, like, to answer the question, do you have to have all this talent to run these systems? The answer is no. You know, like, in fact, I think, like, with Al Golden, it leans more like he likes, you know, J.D. Bertrand's a great guy. He's a smart guy and all that stuff. But we can see what his deficiencies are. But Al Golden really seems to value that, you know, kind of like a past defensive coordinator, you know, like having the smarts and the ability to process all that stuff. And I get that there's a place for it, but you're going to need, you know, again, you're going to need a higher-end guy, higher-end level of talent at those positions as well, ultimately, if you're going to have a truly championship defense.
Right. No, I'm with you. And then, you know, there's high-end talent coming for no. I mean, there's freshmen.
Yes.
They're going to be sophomores. And those freshmen, they did get, you know, whether they played enough for some people, which I totally understand. Okay. Totally get it. But they do have playing experience. Right. And I think it's going to be an all-out battle at linebacker next year and in the offseason because
that's what I've been thinking about that as well.
These
young guys are coming on. These young guys are, you know, are coming on, even though we didn't see as much of them against USC. But again, I think part of that was they wanted the assignment sound guys. Unfortunately, the assignment, quote unquote, assignment sound guys weren't as assignment sound as they needed to be.
And
missed a lot of tackles out there.
The gains of having a smart, intelligent person on the field were outweighed by the fact that they didn't execute.
Right.
Plain and simple.
Especially when you're playing with, you know, with this 3-3-5 So you're keeping an extra linebacker on the field more often, and that's the way the game played out. That's part of how USC was able to run for over 200 yards.
Yep. So agreed.
Okay, question from Brent about the bowl games. Who and where will we play our bowl games? So it appears to be down to three. Okay. Like there from all the everything that I've been able to gather. You got the Cheez-It Bowl in Orlando. You went there a couple of years ago, right?
Is that what it was called? I went to Camping World Bowl. Is that the same one?
That's the Cheez-It.
Okay.
Yeah. You got the Gator Bowl, which is in Jacksonville, and you got the Holiday Bowl.
Right.
Out in San Diego. Virtually every projection out there right now has Notre Dame playing in the Gator Bowl.
Correct.
Against an SEC team.
That's what I've seen as well.
Yeah. Some say South Carolina, some say Mississippi State, some say Ole Miss. It's, obviously it's going to depend on
an SEC team.
Similar records. Yeah.
Which okay. And for the ACC side of things, right, the way the ACC tie-ins, there is an order of operations to who gets to pick and when and all of that, right? And I believe the Cheez-It Bowl has first pick.
Yeah, it goes Cheez-It, Gator, Holiday. That's right. The order of the picks.
It sounds like, from what I have heard and what I've read, is that the Cheez-It Bowl wants Florida State.
Right.
And so the next one would be where Notre Dame would go, because nobody's going to turn down Notre Dame.
Right.
And so that sounds like the Gator Bowl.
And if the Cheez-It did pass on Florida State, they would probably take Notre Dame. But I've heard exactly what you're hearing, that like both of those bowls, because they're in Florida, because it's been a little bit since Florida State, it's kind of been in that, where they could go, that like both of them really covet Florida State right now.
Right.
So,
yep. So that's the way it sounds to me, is that Notre Dame is going to end up in the Gator Bowl against an SEC opponent.
Right.
Whoever that SEC opponent may be, I don't think it matters a whole lot. Obviously, it'd be fun to write about a Lane Kiffin coached team. I like the headlines there.
The one scenario where you could possibly see it, where the Gator Bowl might have a decision to make, if the Cheez-It takes Florida State, but then if North Carolina were to upset Clemson in the ACC championship game, then that knocks Clemson into that tier. Would the Gator Bowl take Notre Dame or Clemson in that situation? Clemson is a lot closer in terms of fan base and everything.
Here's the thing, though. So Clemson would have 11 wins. Notre Dame has 8. Notre Dame needs to be within 2. No, I'm sorry. They have 10 wins, right?
So they're 10-2 right now.
Clemson is 10-2.
So they'd be 10-3 if they lose again.
So they would still be within 2. So, Notre Dame could get selected over Clemson. They have to be within 2, I think. Is it within 2 wins or 1 win?
I believe it's 1.
If it's 1, then they have to take Clemson.
There you go.
To take Clemson.
And that's the situation. Yeah, so that's it right there. So that you're right. They would have no choice then in that case. And that would potentially, unless the Cheez-It said, we'll take Notre Dame. Well, yeah. Yeah. But that's the scenario where Notre Dame could end up in the Holiday Bowl, is if North Carolina beats Clemson.
And I know that the media all wants to go to the Holiday Bowl because it's in San Diego. I get it. But I think our bags are – I don't see North Carolina upsetting Clemson. But in that scenario, then Notre Dame would get pushed to the Holiday Bowl. You are absolutely correct about that. And for everybody that wants LSU to win or LSU to be in the Gator Bowl, I think they would pretty much have to get absolutely smoke-showed by Georgia, which is
a
definite possibility. I would have to look at the SEC tie-ins.
They would fall into that range because all those teams, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, South Carolina, all have at least 4 losses. And if LSU were to lose, which they probably should lose to Georgia, they'd have 4 losses at that point as well. So, they could be.
Yeah.
I'm still.
We'll see.
I'd rather pass the circus than stop.
It would be a circus. And can you imagine if
I'll take a playoff game in a couple years over loses? Gator Bowl.
Can you imagine if they lost that game? If Notre Dame loses that game.
I know.
I don't know that I want to be in an offseason where we have to talk about Brian Kelly beating Notre Dame. Like that, I just would not enjoy that at all.
No,
so
I hear you.
I'm just going to say that.